Welcome to the Buddha Sasana Podcast. This talk was given by Bhikkhu Chintita in Austin, Texas.
Welcome to our audio course, Mindfulness Where Dharma Meets Practice. This is the first talk in the series and the first talk on the topic of living in mindfulness. Buddhism begins with the problematic nature of the human condition. We call this suffering. Our suffering is there in not finding life to be what we want it to be. Why do we have to die? Why do we have to get sick? Why do we have to get old and feeble? Why me? Why do we have to endure pain, both physical and emotional? Why do we have to lose one by one everything and everybody who is dear to us? Why is satisfaction so elusive even when we achieve our goals? Why do we enjoy pleasure of the senses but then find that they lack meaning? Why does life seem like a long series of broken promises? Why do we end up causing so much harm to others around us? Why do we find it so difficult to ease the suffering of others? In short, why is everything such a darn problem? Religion in general, it seems to me, tries to come to terms with suffering in one way or another, and with the problematic nature of the human condition. But Buddhism has a rather unique take on what is going on. It is us who entangle and entrap ourselves in suffering, and we do this through our own unskillful behavior and ways of misperceiving. It is therefore us who can do something to disentangle ourselves and to liberate ourselves from this mess. We do this through more skillful behavior and through proper understanding. Let me introduce a couple of technical terms used to describe all this. Samsara is this entanglement that entraps us in suffering. The Buddha viewed samsara as lasting life after life, that is, until we do something about it. We'll see in a later talk the benefits of framing our entrapment in such a way that death doesn't give us an easy way out of samsara. Briefly, this makes our practice into an epic battle against beginningless eons of conditioning and entanglement. The victory over this conditioning untangles us. We look at the logic of this when we talk about living in devotion. Awakening, also known as enlightenment or liberation or nirvana, is the complete release from our entanglement. Awakening, even though it's hard, is very much in the range of human capability. Through virtue, understanding, and strength of character, we can learn step by step to think, to behave, and to see things otherwise. The Buddha discovered that there is a skill to life. Awakening is the mastery of that skill. Awakening is, more or less, the perfection of character in terms of virtue, wisdom, and serenity. Still, even if we do not reach this perfection, our skill in life improves steadily with practice. Life becomes less and less problematic through progressive stages. The skill of life. We develop a lot of skills in life, riding a bike, throwing pottery, taking care of a toddler, birdwatching, playing poker, cooking French cuisine, or making an arrowhead. In learning a skill, we develop behavioral qualities, mental qualities, and knowledge to try to produce better results of some kind. And we begin to see that there are, broadly speaking, right ways to reach these results and wrong ways that fail to reach results. We depend on teachers, on the wisdom of the ages, and on what we figure out for ourselves to tell the difference. Without proper training in the right and wrong ways of doing things, we might still be able to cook a meal, but not an appetizing one. We might be able to produce a teapot out of clay, but neither a beautiful nor a functional one. We might be able to accomplish life's tasks and to experience some of what life offers, but not with fulfillment and delight, nor without causing harm to others. What we do in Buddhism is the same as what the potter does, except we shape our characters and our lives rather than clay. To do this, we need to distinguish the right or skillful way from the wrong or unskillful. But unlike mundane practices, Buddhism deals with the ultimate concerns of life. It might be considered the skill of life itself. Buddhism offers a gradual course of training that leads to the improvement and eventual mastery of living this life. It defines the practices, principles, values, attitudes, and ways of framing things that lead to the mastery of the skill of life. Let's continue to lay down our technical vocabulary so we can talk about the basic components of Buddhist practice. These terms could just as well apply to almost any other kind of non-Buddhist skill. Karma is intentional action, actions that involve choices or decisions. Karma applies not just to bodily actions or verbal actions, but also, very importantly, to mental actions. Examples of mental actions are thoughts, perceptions, conceptualizations, and plans, since we also make choices in realizing these. Anything we undertake intentionally is therefore karma. Since practice is something we do intentionally, our practice is karma. Sitting on a cushion and reading Dharma books are karma. But so is picking someone's pocket or giving a sandwich to a hungry hobo. Generally, I'll use the word action interchangeably with karma. It's important to note that we are often unaware or barely aware of our karmic choices, even while we're making them. We often describe ourselves as being on autopilot while we make a complex series of decisions. For instance, while we drive to work, usually with distracted minds already in spirit at our destination or else in the clouds, it is still karma. Skillful or unwholesome action is karma that supports our development of beneficial qualities and moves us toward awakening. Wholesome action is good practice. It's usually identified through the quality of the intention behind the action, for instance, kindness or renunciation. An example of wholesome action is giving a sandwich to a hungry hobo or meditating on kindness. Unskillful or unwholesome action is karma that undermines our development of beneficial qualities and moves us away from awakening. Unwholesome karma is bad practice. An example is picking someone's pocket or plotting revenge. Broadly speaking, what is unskillful is motivated by greed, aversion, or delusion, and what is skillful lacks these roots. More about this when we talk about living in virtue. Dharma, also known as doctrine or teachings, serves solely as a guide to skillful practice. It sets the parameters of skillful practice. This is like how a cookbook supports successful cooking. As we engage in practice, we make choices over and over about what tasks we should perform in evolving circumstances. Our practice is successful to the extent that we choose and perform skillful actions and avoid unskillful actions. The Dharma is a guide to skillful karma. There are two important aspects of such actions, recollection and effort. Recollection, or mindfulness, I'll use both words interchangeably, is having learned something in the past, bringing it to mind, and keeping it in mind. With respect to the Dharma, we'll see that recollecting the qualities of the Buddha, recalling the precept not to kill, remembering that craving is the origin of suffering, and simply remembering to keep the mind on the breath are all instances of skillful recollection. Typically, we bring a teaching to mind that is appropriate to the current situation. For instance, while we make an ethical choice to squish or not to squish, this aspect of practice is described by the Buddha like this. Just as the gatekeeper in the king's frontier fortress is wise, competent, and intelligent, one who keeps out strangers and admits acquaintances for protecting its inhabitants and for warding off outsiders, so too a noble disciple is recollective, possessing supreme recollection and discrimination, one who remembers and recollects what was done and said long ago. With recollection as his gatekeeper, the noble disciple abandons the unwholesome and develops the wholesome, abandons what is blameworthy and develops what is blameless, and maintains himself in purity. Notice that this practice describes mindfulness or recollection as remembering what was done and said long ago, but it also pairs mindfulness with evaluation of the current situation. The present situation is evaluated on the basis of the recollection in what is or is not wholesome. In this way, recollection attends to the current situation. Recollection is attentive or attends to the present situation when what it brings to mind is used to discern some particular aspect of the present situation. Mindfulness is usually attentive in Buddhism because Buddhism is fundamentally about exercising skill in real practice situations. In one discourse, the Buddha describes an occasion in which a large crowd of people gets together to witness the most beautiful girl of the land dance and sing. A man shows up who is given, to his chagrin, the following instruction. You must carry around this bowl of oil filled to the brim between the crowd and the most beautiful girl of the land. A man with a drawn sword will be following right behind you, and wherever you spill even a little of it right there, he will fell your head. The Buddha assesses that the man will not likely stop attending to the bowl of oil, that he will not be distracted by the dance and song of the most beautiful girl of the land. The Buddha then asks his monks to practice mindfulness like that, directed to the body. This shows the important role of non-distraction in attentive recollection. In this case, what is borne in mind is what was just recently said, the single task at hand, its parameters, and its motivation. If the Dharma is a cookbook, then recollection as a factor in Buddhist practice must be turned to the right page at any given time, for instance, maybe to how to flambé. Recollection must be attentive in order to bring to mind what is relevant to the present situation. Mindfulness in Buddhism is, simply put, where Dharma hits the road of practice. For example, mindfulness might act as the gatekeeper when the impulse arises, yikes, a twiddle bug, whap, to assault a living being. It brings to mind the first of the five precepts, which provides guidance in the current situation that whap is unskillful. When we see that as we develop our skill, much of what we are mindful of may be implications of Dharma that we discover for ourselves in our experience. Effort is endeavoring to achieve or develop what is skillful and to avoid or get rid of what is not skillful, according to the standards that one brings to mind. For instance, if the angry impulse arises to thrash someone severely with one's umbrella, mindfulness arises with the recognition that this would violate the first precept, as it would constitute an unwholesome assault on a living being. It is effort that would resist this impulse. Maybe it replaces the anger with a kind thought, or it loosens your grip on the umbrella until a cooler mind prevails. We can think of recollection as a thermostat and effort as an electric heater. The thermostat controls the heater. Recollection monitors or attends to the room temperature and notices when the temperature drops below or rises above a certain threshold. Effort kicks in to start heating or to stop heating when the threshold is crossed. Likewise, mindfulness monitors the miso soup on the stove, recalling that miso soup should not be allowed to come to a boil. Effort turns off the stove at the critical moment identified by mindfulness and lifts the lid off the pot. If recollection and effort work together well, we have diligence. Diligence is an important concept for the Buddha. For all skillful qualities are rooted in diligence and converge upon diligence, and diligence is declared foremost among them. Notice that we might fulfill recollection but not fulfill effort. The thermostat might work fine, but the heater has blown a fuse. We can be mindful of the Dharma but neglect to make effort to behave according to the Dharma. For instance, if we drink wine gleefully with friends but are fully aware that we are violating a precept about alcohol. A lot of our practice will be like this. Recollection and effort are quite distinct factors of mind with quite distinct functions. But after recollection, effort can choose whether to uphold or shirk. Still in practice, steadfast recollection tends to wear away any resistance to bring up effort. In this sense, we can live in mindfulness even while falling short of its demands. The fruits of practice. Why do we practice the Dharma at all, or any other skill for that matter? In short, because we expect to get something out of it. The result or fruit of an action is the short or long-term benefit or detriment to ourselves that plays out as a consequence of that action. But are we looking for something for ourselves or for others? We can identify four possibilities in this respect, all of which seem to show up for various non-Buddhist practices and habitual behaviors. One, a practice might produce no benefit for me or for anyone else. We often call this a bad habit when it actually brings harm, like smoking, like drinking oneself under the table, or like getting into street fights. That people engage in these activities anyway speaks to the depth of human confusion. Two, a practice might provide some benefit for me, but not for other beings, like hunting or like picking someone's pocket. Three, a practice might provide some benefits for others, but little to me, like breaking rocks in a chain gang, or like working overtime under duress so my boss can go golfing over the weekend. Four, finally, the benefit of a practice for others might be the same as its benefit for me. Feeding outdoor birds or pets, or taking care of our own children fit into this win-win category. A lot of amateur chefs and grandmothers likewise experience personal satisfaction from their skill and effort in the bright faces, delighted smiles, smacking of lips, and positive comments of the satiated. Buddhist practice fits squarely into this last win-win category. What is skillful is of benefit to oneself and to others as well, and what is unskillful is of harm to oneself and to others as well. Buddhist practice is most fundamentally about ethics, and therefore about being harmless and of service to others in the world. Benefit to ourselves and to others are intimately linked, and when developed together, produce a kind of character that is outwardly kind and compassionate and ultimately saintly, and that inwardly has an abiding sense of satisfaction and delight, along with wisdom and compassion. In the end, Buddhist practice can lead to the perfection of the human character, to what we call awakening. What's skillful tends at the same time to benefit both self and others, while what is unskillful is to the detriment of both. This aspect of the fruit of our actions is described by the Buddha. I am the owner of my actions, heir to my actions, born of my actions, related through my actions, and have my actions as my arbitrator. Whatever I do for good or for evil, to that I will fall heir. Notice that this makes clear that our development is a product of our actions, all of our actions, of body, speech, and mind. In what sense are we the heir? We gain some understanding of this through the idea of old karma. Old karma is the accumulation of long-term results or fruits that remain with us from past actions to our future well-being or detriment. I find it helpful to think of new karma as shaping a landscape by driving an ox cart back and forth and all around. The karmic wheels create ruts that depend on our choices, and these tracks are old karma. Even while we make the choices, the wheels are disposed to falling into old karmic ruts, particularly into the deeper ruts. When the wheels follow established ruts, those ruts become ever deeper. Unfortunately, these ruts are most typically the products of an unskillful search for personal advantage. These ruts tend to perpetuate themselves into the future until proper practice does something about them. If we let the ox decide which way to go, we are negligent, led by old karma. However, we can at any time steer toward open ground to begin a new rut or to choose the rut least traveled on. Old karma tends to nudge us into ruts that allow us to go heedlessly into autopilot and make it ever more difficult to do otherwise. It is through our actions that we shape our karmic landscape, and thereby we shape our character. It is through deliberate actions that we remake our landscape and character. It is through Buddhist practice that we reshape our karmic landscape to liberate us from the most problematic of our habituated ruts. It's important to develop mindfulness on a continual basis. The reason is that all of our actions help shape our karmic landscape. Our path of development does not differentiate what we are doing at work or in bed from what we are doing at the local Buddhist center. We are producing karma all of the time, not just during the 8% of the day, for instance, that we are practicing Buddhism. In fact, the other 92% of the time is bound to dominate our progress. This is why it's important to develop persistent mindfulness. This is why it's important to learn to live in mindfulness throughout the day. Suppose you're knitting a sweater. You have maybe an hour every morning to work on it, so it takes a number of weeks to finish. Normally, you might put it aside when you have other things to do and then pick it up later and keep knitting on it from where you left off. In this way, you make steady progress and never backslide. You might think your spiritual practice is like this, but it's not. Suppose you are never allowed to put the sweater aside, but have to wear it, or that part of it that is completed, throughout the day, while washing dishes, while you make a presentation at a board meeting, while you change a flat tire, while walking through underbrush, or while playing with kittens. Your practice is actually like this. It's easily soiled or unraveled by what you are doing the rest of the day. You don't get to put the sweater aside. This is why persistent mindfulness is important. All of your karma counts.
Further resources related to this course, Mindfulness, Where Dharma Meets Practice, are available at Seetegu, that is sitagu, sitagu.org/shortlinks/mindful.